This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, I'm Richard Ady. Welcome to The Money. This week, why this song, all 8.5 minutes of it, probably wouldn't be written today, and a lot more besides. Because we're looking at the economics of streaming music. There are lots of ways that a song makes money, something we looked at in 2016. But unless you're paying to attend a live performance, most of it comes back to the intellectual property, the rights. Amy Donald is an expert on this stuff. She's the digital licensing manager at APRA AMCOS.
So a song is made up of two rights. You've got the copyright musical work, and then you've got the sound recording. And I always kind of explain it to people like, I could write a work and I own the composition and the lyrics, and then someone like Sia could come along and record that written work and she'd then own the sound recording.
So when a song is streamed, say this song that you have written and Sia has recorded, who gets paid?
Good question. So APRA AMCOS represents the copyright musical work on behalf of songwriters, composers and music publishers. So we make sure that the owners of copyright musical works get paid.
Right.
Now, record labels, they represent the sound recordings and they also make sure that the artist gets paid that way.
To play the song, you have to pay the license fees, and that goes for the companies that stream the music.
In regards to streaming, the majority of services are either ad-funded or subscription-based music services.
Right, so ad-funded, the best-known one would be YouTube, of course, for most people.
Yeah, sure, or Spotify ad-funded.
Right, okay.
Then the license fees for an ad-funded service,
yep,
they're based on the percentage of advertising revenue that's generated for that particular reporting period. That might be a month or a quarter. Subscription services, like Apple Music or Spotify subscription, they're based on the greater of a percentage of subscription revenue, or what's called a per subscriber minima, so the number of subscribers per month on that service.
Are you paid more if more people stream your song?
Yeah, so the distributable pool of money for each quarter is made up of the money that's generated for that service type and the total number of streams. So if you had more streams than someone else in that quarter, you would get a bigger chunk of the revenue.
So how big is streaming? Dan Kopf is a senior reporter at online magazine Quartz.
Streaming is now the biggest part of the music industry, at least here in the United States, where it makes up for about 75% of the $10 billion in revenues the music industry had in 2018. And it's really saved the music industry from its decline in the 2000s when Napster and other services that you could use to steal music was looking like it was going to destroy the industry.
So of that huge amount of revenues, what percentage do the streaming companies keep for themselves?
They only actually get about 20%. There are different estimates out there, but for the most part, it looks like the labels typically take about 80% are they're paid out of what Spotify gets.
And what about the subscriber numbers, Dan? Do we have a handle on those?
Sure, yeah. Globally, Spotify is number one. It's creeping up to about 100 million, almost 100 million in subscribers. Though in the U.S., actually, Apple Music has passed Spotify as the number one. And it looks like Apple Music will be able to be a bigger competitor globally soon, too. So they have about 28 million in the U.S. compared to 26 million on Spotify.
Spotify and Apple are the giants, but there's dozens of others. And Andy Irvine has to deal with all of them. He runs GyroStream, which acts as a middleman between the artist and the streaming company.
You know, everyone is a little bit different and there's plenty that are special to their market. So there's a lot of streaming services around the world that people may not have heard of. Obviously, like you said, Apple and Spotify are the main ones. You've got companies like Claro Musica in South America that have, you know, 28 million plus users. You've got a few of the huge Chinese companies that some of them are run by Tencent. You've got, like you said, Deezer, who are very big in France, and Gami, who have about 40 million subscribers throughout the Middle East. And so, you know, not only are some of these localized more to their specific markets, but they, you know, are quite different in the way they approach their marketing and what they offer their users in terms of, you know, their apps and stuff like that. So when it comes to, you know, Apple and Spotify, yes, you have a very similar catalog across both services. But, you know, if you're an iPhone user, you might prefer the interface of using Apple Music as opposed to something like Spotify. But I think at the end of the day, you know, it's about making sure that you're covering off as many people as possible. And, you know, you look at Spotify has about a 38% market share. So if you only focus yourself on Spotify, you're leaving a lot of potential market reach out.
Okay, what are the rates? What do they pay per song streamed?
They're a little bit different. You know, it's all a similar amount of money per stream that you'll get from most of the bulk of the main services. I can't really give definitive numbers because there's a whole range of factors that go into play, whether or not you're being streamed from a free or a paid account, whether or not, you know, you're on a family plan or, you know, part of a 3-month free streaming subscription. So the way that the payments work is very complicated, and I think that confuses a lot of artists.
I looked at this a couple of years ago, about 2.5-3 years ago, and at that stage the best numbers we could get were for YouTube ad supported, you got for your song being played out once about 0.03 of a cent.
Mm-hmm.
And Spotify was offering about 0.1 cent.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big difference between the two, but they're still tiny, tiny, tiny amounts of money.
They are indeed. And I think they've improved slightly as license fees have increased over time. But the amount that people are streaming has stayed the same to a certain point.
Dan Kopp says one of the big streamers is taking a different approach.
Deezer is actually looking to change to a by user payouts for artists rather than overall use. So it's a bit of a complicated issue, but when payouts go to labels, it goes from overall streams, regardless of who did it. So if if you're a subscriber who doesn't use Spotify much and you just use it for one artist, you know, some indie artist that you loved, actually that money that your subscriber money doesn't actually go to that artist. It goes into a big pot of streams. And if there's another person who's just listening to pop music and they listen to 100 times more music than you do in a week, actually your artist will only get one out of every $100 in streaming. And Deezer wants to change it, I think interestingly, to being a user model where actually your $10 would go to that artist versus $10 from the other person would be split up on all the pop music that they listen to.
So the benefits of Deezer's model, which they're looking at, haven't adopted yet, they will fundamentally flow to the artist. Is that right?
Yeah, it's more like independent artists would likely do better through that way. Right now, Spotify is really working best for the top musicians and the biggest musicians and the people that get played on playlists a lot. Whereas it's not doing that well for the indie rock artist or the small-time rapper. That's not really where Spotify's money is going.
This is The Money with me, Richard Aidy, and that's A Little Forte by Zoe Keating. She's a cellist and composer, and since 2012, she's been publishing her income online.
I kept going to, you know, music conferences, and people were telling me that Spotify was going to save me and save my career. And so I thought, I don't think people actually know how artists in the middle class like me make a living. So I thought I would just start posting my earnings. And I thought that maybe other artists would do the same, like, because people were saying also at the time, like, well, nobody's actually selling music anymore. And I was still selling music. I was still, you know, that year I had my album that I'd self-released on like the Billboard charts in America. So without any marketing or publicity on my end. And so that's why I started doing it. And I kind of wanted to see like, okay, well, both tell the public, like, this is how an independent artist makes a living. And also to see if it was going to change. Like, is streaming going to cannibalize my sales? I was always a little worried about that. And I thought I should just make sure I diversify my income. That's when I got a licensing agent and I started sort of doing a bit more touring and got a booking agent so I could get higher fees just to kind of make sure that I had more than two legs on my stool.
That's why she's done it. What is she earning from people who stream her work?
Well, it's different for each service. For example, last year on Spotify, I had 2.5 million streams and I earned $12,000. And then $3,000 from Pandora I still seem to earn the most of my money from sales via iTunes and from Bandcamp.
So which of the streamers gives you the best return?
It seems to be Apple Music and Tidal. Those seem to be the best. I've been sort of releasing my earnings as though I was a public corporation for a number of years. And I did this for a number of reasons, but one of them, I wanted to do my accounts and see where the income was coming from. I've fallen a little bit behind, so I'm about 6 months behind right now. But generally, it seems like Tidal and Apple Music are the highest.
You mentioned Bandcamp. That's different to the main streamers.
Well, Bandcamp is direct to artist. So I have my website sort of based around Bandcamp, and listeners can go up there and they can stream the music for free. And they can also decide to download it if they want to, and they can pay what they want. And that's vastly different. So some of my listeners are incredibly enthusiastic and will pay $100 for a single track. And some people will pay 99 cents or 50 cents. It actually really works for me. So I feel like an artist like me who has a pretty strong relationship with my core audience, I give the music to them first on Bandcamp because they're the ones who are going to pay for it the most. And then I put it on the streaming services.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because that is a channel that's much more direct to your core fan base.
Yeah. And one thing about Bandcamp is, you know, they don't do the marketing that a company like Spotify does. So it really is music aficionados. A lot of musicians use Bandcamp. And somewhat like Tidal, they also don't have the market share that Spotify does. So, you know, I think if Bandcamp were able to expand a little bit and get their story out there, I really feel like it would be better for artists. As it is now, I feel like at least once a week I'm telling somebody about Bandcamp and they've never heard of it. So in terms of, you know, music sales and streaming, I do make the most per item on Bandcamp. However, it's not the most volume-wise.
All right. How does this all fit together? How much of your income comes from streaming, from sales, from performing, merchandise?
Well, I don't sell merchandise. I made a decision about 10 years ago or longer that I didn't want to really contribute any more junk to the world. So I don't sell t-shirts or mouse pads or anything like that. I decided just to sell music. So when you go to one of my concerts, I actually don't even charge for the CDs. I just leave a donation box and follow the Bandcamp model at my own show and let people pay what they want, because I discovered that actually I made more money by letting people give me what they wanted to than charging a set price for a CD or a vinyl. Anyways, you know, it's always shifting. But last year, streaming was roughly $18,000. And then iTunes, which I think of as separate from streaming, iTunes was $19,000. And then Bandcamp was $30,000. And then the rest of my income is live performances, ASCAP, and direct licensing, like for movies.
So streaming sounds like it's necessary, but very far from sufficient.
Yes.
Zoe Keating does some of her own administration. She works directly with Apple and Bandcamp. She does the physical sales of CDs through Amazon. But to manage what you might call the other channels, Spotify, Amazon Prime, and Tidal, she uses a digital distribution company. There's quite a few of them. And that's what Gyrostream is. It's based in Brisbane and run by Andy Irvine.
We felt that Australia didn't have a really true independent local distributor for independent artists in particular that was open to everybody and open to all genres. So a lot of big international companies based out of the UK and the US is what the predominant Australian independent artists have been using. And in the market these days with streaming, it's like when your music comes out, you have to be on it straight away. You've got, you know, a week to really try and make a dent in all that content that's just going through those systems and through Spotify and Apple every single day. So we think it's really valuable to have a local resource that can help with not only setting up your release and the campaign strategy that goes around that, but also making sure that there's technical support on the ground so that as soon as it goes up, if there's any issues, it can be dealt with very quickly.
And it's not just having the connections with the streaming companies. For independent artists hoping to make it, recording a song, even one my daughter would call a bop, is just the beginning.
there's 40,000 songs get uploaded to Spotify nearly every single day, which is an enormous amount of content. So if you just put your music up there and hope for the best, nothing's going to happen. So artists need strategies and real strategies to help cut through that content.
Wow. And how does DiroStream make money?
So we make money. We have a very small upload fee when you distribute with us, and then we make a small commission. We have an 8% commission on the streaming royalties made. So it's very much in our interest for artists to be doing well and to be streaming well. And if they stream well and they have success, then we'll have success as a business as well.
You've been open a year. How's it working out?
So we've had a really good first year. We've got over 1,000 artists that we're currently working with. We definitely have a 3 to 5 year strategy in terms of, you know, where we see the business going. And, you know, all at the moment, all signs are really, really positive, and the industry has been really supportive, and our artists have been truly supportive of what we're trying to do as well.
Who are some of the artists that you represent? Would people know who they are?
Certainly if you're listening to Triple J and stuff like that, you definitely would have heard of some of our artists. We put Tia Gustello's album out last year, and she won the Album of the Year at the Queensland Music Awards this year. Yeah, and a whole bunch of other artists who are really, you know, because we're so new, we're really focusing on kind of like that next generation of really talented emerging artists, and we've got some amazing artists coming through at the moment.
This is The Money on RN, the ABC Listen app, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Richard Ady. Today, we're looking at music streaming. Now, it's easy to frame it as just the latest delivery system for recorded music. So we go from Edison's tinfoil phonograph to the gramophone, then vinyl, cassettes, CDs. Now we're here. But that's not the whole story. Dan Kopf from Quartz.
Like in all the history of music, the way payments are made affect the way music is made. So artists and labels are paid by stream, right? So it doesn't matter whether the song is 2.5 minutes long or 12 minutes long, the labels get the same amount of money. And so it really benefits shorter songs. There's less reason to have a longer one. And so it incentivizes artists to make their song shorter on each album. And it looks like that's actually affecting the length of music pretty dramatically over the last several years.
Can you point to artists who seem to have done this, released, I don't know, a lot of small songs at once?
Yeah. An interesting example of a big star that songs have gotten shorter is Kendrick Lamar. In his first album, the average song was about 5.5 minutes, and none of the songs were shorter than 3.5 minutes. And on his last album, the typical track was more like 3 minutes, and there was almost nothing longer than 4. And so he basically stuffing a lot more songs into a shorter length. Now, of course, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad. His Damn, which was his most recent album with much shorter songs, won a Pulitzer Prize. So it's not necessarily that shorter songs are worse songs. Holla, bitch, sit down. Holla, bitch, sit down. Sit down.
What about you, Zoe? Because some of your tracks are 8 minutes long.
It's funny, I was because I was just on this tour with Imogen Heap and Guy Sigsworth, and he's co-wrote so many songs with these hit artists, and we were talking about the trend towards shorter and shorter songs and joking around that, you know, maybe we should just get together and write some 30-second and 1 minute songs, you know, like a bunch of them, because that's how you would game the system. And I personally haven't done that, although I know artists who are, and I have no intention of it. In fact, I was thinking about making my songs longer. I don't know, we'll see, but I'm damned if I'm going to let the platform affect the kind of music I'm making.
Zoe's in the resistance. But streaming isn't only making songs shorter, it's shaping them in other ways too.
One of the other rules around streaming is that you don't get paid unless you get to 30 seconds. So it's likely, we've talked to producers who say that, yeah, there's more emphasis on getting that person to 30 seconds. So there's the saying, don't bore us, get to the chorus. And it seems like there's an increasing number of songs that just begin, blam, right on the chorus. So you don't have to wait, and it keeps people there for those 30 seconds, and the artists are more likely to get paid. One kiss is all it takes, falling in love with
So in purely economic terms, Dan, there's sort of a Goldilocks duration, isn't there?
That's absolutely right. I mean, you really don't want somebody to be listening for 28 seconds. And you don't really care if they listen to more than beyond 30 seconds. From a financial perspective, it's all the same.
So we could possibly look to see some 32, 33, 35 second tracks.
Well, that's right. Actually, I was looking at recently Solange's new album, so Beyonce's sister, famously. All of these sort of very short interludes, they were all at least 30 seconds on that album. So I think artists are aware of this, at least labels are aware of this, and they're asking, you know, please don't do a 12-second interlude. That's not going to make us any money. Get it to 30.
Actually, to be fair to Solange, her latest album, When I Get Home, which came out last year, has 5 interludes and 1 intermission. 4 of these do not get to 30 seconds, which means she won't get paid for them. This is an album of short tracks. There's 19 of them and 10 are less than 2 minutes. You can play the whole thing in 39 minutes and 1 second. This is The Money. I'm Richard Adie and we're looking at streaming. To get a handle on how much it's growing, I asked Amy Donald from APRA AMCOS to look at their revenue from streaming since Spotify arrived in Australia in 2012.
The first full year of results that we have is for the 2013 financial year, so 2012-2013. Audio streaming revenue back then was $2.4 million for the year. And this made up 0.9% of APRA AMCOS's total revenue.
That's not very much at all.
It's not very much. So now I guess we move to FY18, so the 2017-2018 financial year.
Yep.
And audio streaming revenue was $81.9 million. This made up 19.5% of our total revenue.
And I guess that sits in a wider bucket called digital, which is probably worth even more and probably the biggest chunk.
Absolutely. So our overall digital revenue, which encompasses video on demand, digital downloads and audio streaming and user-generated platforms.
So that's what, Facebook and YouTube?
YouTube. Yeah. Grossed $134.5 million.
And that bucket for all digital income is now the biggest bucket there is.
Digital income is now the leading source of revenue for APRA AMCOS. In the last financial year, FY18, digital income has taken over from broadcast as the leading source of revenue, and it's completely outstripped physical sales decline, which is really important.
So people aren't buying CDs anymore.
Exactly.
But they're actually spending more.
Yeah. So I guess anyone who is subscribing to a subscription service is paying over probably $150 a year to access all the content that they can possibly imagine, but they're paying more than they ever did when they were maybe buying, you know, 2 or 3 albums a year.
Yeah. I can remember when my own addiction was much bigger than that.
Absolutely,
anyway.
And it definitely depends on the person.
For most music lovers who aren't audiophiles, so the people prepared to spend large sums on sources, amps and speakers, streaming is brilliant. You can access so much music so easily and, compared to the old days, so cheaply. You can never hear it all, and you probably don't want to, but the algorithms are increasingly good at encouraging you to try, suggesting tracks you don't know but might very well like. It's great. But that's the listener's perspective. What about the artists? Can they make a living? Andy Irvine from Gyrostream.
We have some artists who definitely get a full-time wage from what they're doing. It's really, really shifting at the moment. So those artists that manage to break through on a more global scene, I mean, that's where artists need to be thinking these days. You know, it's being available globally, so they need to be able to find strategies to find that audience and discover that audience. And those that have successfully doing that are definitely making good money. And the thing that we're seeing as well with streaming these days is that your standard 2-year album cycle doesn't really exist anymore. If you have a great song, song that comes out and has organic traction and is in a lot of people's playlists that they listen to at work every day or on the bus to work, you'll find that those songs have a much greater lifespan than they would have, you know, say 20 years ago or something, or 15 years ago even, and that songs that have come out, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago are still producing great income month in, month out because of that organic reach.
Zoe Keating, who's an independent artist, is making it work. But does streaming make it easier or harder for her?
On one level, all the music in the universe is there for you to listen to. But everybody talks about the problem that how do you find what you love? I do think that it is sometimes harder to be found on Spotify, my music. And I also think that people sort of have lost, to some extent, the connection between the music and the artist. I meet people all the time who say they heard me on something and that they didn't know it was me or they didn't know how to find me. And so not that long ago, Spotify added the ability for artists to create accounts so that I could tell listeners when I have a show near them. And that's actually made a huge difference for me just in the last year, in that somebody who might listen to me there could actually get a message that, hey, this artist is playing near you.
Dan Kopf, the reporter at Quartz, is a music lover, but he writes about economics and data. What does he think the future looks like?
I think that we're moving towards a model where artists are going to do better. I think that there's an increasing amount of pressure and an increasing amount of competition to try to make sure that it's not a winners-take-all model, right? Right now, I think, you know, the majority of revenues go to the top 1%, you know, 1% of artists on there. And I think that users are going to be increasingly aware of that. And as I said earlier, we saw what Deezer's doing to try to make it so that payments are a little bit more balanced across the music industry. And I do think that that's going to happen. And Spotify has said that that will be difficult for them because paying by user in the way that we were talking earlier is actually more administratively expensive for them, that it takes a lot of time to figure out exactly how much each user listened to each artist and then pay out in that way. But that seems sort of unlikely. They already do things like show people at the end of the year how much they've listened to different artists. So it seems like they should be able to do it.
Thanks to everybody you heard from today. Dan Kopf, journalist at Quartz, cellist and composer Zoe Keating, Andy Irvine, the general manager and co-founder of Gyrostream, and Amy Donald, the digital licensing manager at APRA AMCOS. If you go to the Money's homepage at abc.net.au/radionational, you'll find links to all of these organisations and to Zoe Keating's website. If you really want to dig down into the economics of streaming, there's a terrific weekly newsletter called Penny Fractions. That's a perfect name, by the way. And you'll find a link to that on our homepage as well. The Money is produced by Belinda Sommer. Our sound engineer is Russell Stapleton. I'm Richard Ady.
Listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.